Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Bucher and Friends podcast, co-starring 10-year NBA center Ryan Hollins.
Couple pump fakes leads in, shot blocked by Ryan Hollins. Hollins sent that into the third row.
6 rebounds and 8 assists.
Oh! Hollins climbs the stairs. Down the floor.
Ryan Hollins, he is the high jumper.
That's what I want to see. Give me some gunpowder and throw the hammer down.
And now, here is your host.
Might send it over to Rick Bucher.
Rick Bucher.
Welcome to another episode of Bucher and Hollins, subsidiary of Bucher and Friends, part of the United WeCast Network. I'm Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1. You can read me on Bleacher Report. You can hear me on radio.com and Entercom terrestrial stations. And you can follow me on Twitter at Rick Bucher and on Instagram at Rick_Bucher. He is NBA vet Ryan Hollins. You can hear and see him on various ESPN platforms. You can follow him on Twitter at TheRyanHollins and on Instagram at SimplyRyanHollins. And you can see him on occasion in the Big Three these days. The balling days are not over for Mr. Hollins. All right. The balling days are over for David Fizdale with the New York Knicks. And I can shed a little bit of light. I'll tell what I know when it comes to that situation. But what I'm really curious from your standpoint, more than anything, is what is it like to have a coaching change in the, as Ryan Hollins constructs his studio before our very eyes?
Are you hearing? You hear everything, man.
Dude. I hear everything. Our listeners hear everything. He's taking his hard hat off now. He's good. The work gloves are off. He's ready to go. Have you ever experienced where you had a coach let go mid-season, early, at any point? And what's the impact?
Well, when I was with the Kings, that's when it happened. But, well, you know, it's funny. I would even say this. You know, there are so many questions about, oh, Ryan, why is he so inconsistent? Why is he so this? Why is he so that? Like, I didn't have a year where I came back with a coach. I'm trying to think my first time. Hmm. Byron Scott might have been the first coach that, like, I had a year with and then came back to. And it was just an ugly situation in Cleveland. Like, you know, it's funny, just on a side note, as a player.
Yeah.
So every single year I had a new coach. Charlotte, first 3 years, different coach. Get traded to Dallas, new coach halfway through the season. So as a player, it's funny, like for a young guy that was dependent on a coach and developing and what system, I had a new coach every year. Byron Scott was the first coach that I didn't have again. Now, to answer your question, as I kind of veered off.
Yeah, right? No.
You sound pretty intrigued with that because there's something there. In with Sacramento, we had three coaches in a year, if you remember that.
Yeah.
We had Mike Malone,
yeah,
who was pretty darn good, which we fired because he wasn't playing fast enough.
He wasn't answering the texts from the owner either.
Right. Right after the game, right? Right at halftime, right?
Yep.
We had Tyrone Corbin. And then Ty gets fired, and like George Karl had been working an angle, and George was doing some ESPN, I believe, at the time and stuff like that. And then George just slides on in in the season, and it was survival of the fittest. It was, this guy used to be in coach's graces. Now he's not playing anymore.
Right.
Like, it was tough. You go into survival mode when your coach is fired mid-city because you're nervous. You don't know what to expect. Hmm. And as much as you want to put things together, it's impossible to compete.
How different were the sets that you ran between the three coaches?
Well, like, by that time, I was accustomed to just, hey, just new coach, new playbook, just figure it out.
Right.
But we ran a lot of post-up stuff for DeMarcus or to Mike Malone. Ty Corbin, we ran similar stuff, but he tried to speed it up in more of a secondary. Mm-hmm. More of a secondary break means you're not going to be as structured. It's more like one or two screens and then go score the ball.
Yep.
And George Karl was complete spacing. And he took, you know, Jason Thompson off the floor, who was our starting power forward, and Rudy Gay and D. Will, Darren Williams, played the four, and Omri Caspi at that time, and we spread the court. So it was three completely different systems.
Hmm. It always amazes me, in part, that people don't realize when they want a coach fired, that you're talking about, you're basically, in most cases, you're forfeiting whatever thoughts you had about where that season is going to go.
Yep.
Because you have to implement a new system on the fly. You have to get everybody comfortable on the fly. And I'm, you know, generally you'll get like a little bump. And I wonder, like, that first game when you have a new coach, we see it all the time. Teams suddenly play, like, you rarely get a bad game. You may not win, but the team always seems to overachieve whatever it was doing previously. Is that just because everybody's on, like, trying to prove their worth to the new guy? What is the element among the players that causes that to happen?
You are trying to prove your worth. And if you hadn't had a starting spot, you know, you're trying to save your spot, or you're trying to get in the mix. It's like a clean slate because, you know, when you're coach's guy, you're good. You don't know if you're coach's guy or you're not, or what vision he saw. Cause the one thing about a new coach, he always wants to put his imprint on the game. There's a game behind the game. Why does he want to do that? Because he can't win the way that the other coach won. Because everybody's going to say, well, why do we get rid of the other coach?
Right.
You're doing what he did. So in a sense, that's the reasoning why a guy gets kicked out the lineup. You know, the plays change. You know, it's not always for the better. And it should necessarily be for the better, but it isn't always.
Right. How far in advance could you predict this guy ain't going to make it? This coach is gone. What are the signals that tell you, oh, this guy's on thin ice, or it's just any day now?
Coaches are normally cool, calm, and collected. And you start seeing things get out of character. You start seeing coaches kind of barter with players, or kind of, you know, they're losing control. Or you see that certain players will see that the coach is on the fringe.
Right.
Like, I ain't listening to him no more. And that's where things go bad. I think even like with Randy Whitman, when I was in Washington, I felt like, you know, Randy catered to John a little too much. And John is a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like he knew that John held a higher place in the organization than he did.
Right.
And I felt like that hindered us that year. And I would say it's tough because you're trying to get on the same page. And even, you know, Ty Corbin had his issues with it. You know, I'm not going to say what player, but I think some of the guys made it kind of tough on him. And I thought he was pretty transparent and straight up with us, with the things we did. But you can tell a coach on the fringe, and then you have like a, you know, you can feel a bad loss. Like, oh, you lost to a bad team, or there's a game with some type of implications. Yeah. You know, I even think of, you know, not the same thing, but similar concept. What's going on over in Dallas? You know, you don't fire Jason Garrett. Like, if you had a chance to make the playoffs, don't fire as much as you want to complain, whatever it may be. You still have don't fire Jason Garrett.
Right. Well, and yeah.
In terms of Fizdale, right, bro? Like, if what do you expect? I understand it, Dolan. Maybe there's stuff we didn't see, but like, I gotta know where this urgency is. Now, sometimes in the NBA, I will say this, Rick, and I want to know your feelings. It's almost like I got the first bid at a coach that you can lock up, because there are good coaches out there. Mm-hmm. You can be the first to jump in, and I think that was Vivek's mindset, that he wanted George Karl. Mm-hmm. Things got too stale with Malone, or too ugly, and George Karl was just kind of, you know, he was having this bidding war behind the scenes.
Right.
You know, but it tore us up. Those are things that you don't see, because they always know. You don't fire the guy without knowing that there's another guy that
sure.
you want.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Like, explain to me why my guy was fired in Sacramento after the year that he had. What's my guy? I don't know how I'm forgetting my favorite guy's name, man.
Dave Yeager?
Yes. Yeager's my guy. Yeager did a heck of a job.
Yeah.
You did a better job.
Hey, Lionel Hollins won 50-plus games and went to the playoffs in Memphis and got fired.
Oh, Kevin McHale with the Rockets. They made it to the conference finals and got fired.
Yeah.
Mark Jackson. You know what I'm saying? So it's like they know another guy, like, oh, he can do the job. And it's like, oh, you're on.
Yeah. I mean, like, it goes back to the Mike Malone thing. It's a lot of it is, first of all, if you have a new GM, he wants his guy. And it's as much guys wanting to protect each other. Like, I want a guy who's in my corner. I want a guy that I can trust. I want a guy that's not trying to go behind my back and get my job, or, you know, get the personnel control. And it still remains very much a network, if not an old boys network, when it comes to that. And then the other part is that you have owners that are more involved than ever before. And so they want a guy who is at least going to look, you know, in the case of Mike Malone, and I don't think he's like the only coach, like they want to have input. I guarantee you, Joe Lacob with the Warriors, like, if Bob Myers and Steve Kerr didn't know how to politically make Joe Lacob feel like they're listening to him, that they're taking his input, they're taking his son's input. Like, there's a way to do it and be politically correct. Where
should you have to, though?
If you want to keep the job. I mean, look, Mark Jackson did a great job. He was not he did not play the political game. And as
Let me ask this. I don't know if you're sourced or not, or this is just your opinion.
Yeah.
When it comes to the New York Knicks, does Dolan know who he wants?
As of right now?
Does he have a I fire Fizz because I know what I want? Is this more about who he wants next, or just he and Fizz didn't see eye to eye? Because this, from a basketball stance, from a player standpoint, I wouldn't say that I necessarily understand it.
Yeah,
but you know more behind the scenes. What you got, Rick?
I believe they already have an idea of where they want to go next, but I believe that the driving force in making the decision now was that they were getting embarrassed, and they were getting embarrassed at home. Like, the first press conference, they were playing well on the road, but they were getting beaten, and they were getting beaten by teams that they should not have been, you know, crushed by at home. And so Dolan was getting embarrassed in his building. And the firing came after 230-plus-point losses. It was like, I can't take this. I need to do something. I need to, and I'm putting myself in Dolan's shoes. So, but I also believe, look, honestly, I feel as if that was not the right job for David Fizdale. For as new of a coach as he is, I mean, think about his prior experience. He was an assistant coach in Miami. Ton of structure there, and it's with LeBron James, it's with Dwayne Wade. Like, there's some built-in things when it comes to coaching that you don't have to deal with when you have the structure of the Miami Heat and you have superstars like that leading your team. There's just certain things that you have to coach talent, but coaching talent, you know, superstars is a little bit different. And it's a little bit different when you have a Pat Riley behind you, right?
That's true.
It's different.
That's because because I know ain't nobody bigger than Pat.
Right. Right. And so if Pat is in your corner, like if you do what Pat wants you to do, you're good. You're good. And it means you're good and everybody else is good with you. Now, so Fizz goes from there. Then he goes to Memphis. Well, Memphis was an established setup too. You got Zach, you got Mark Gasol, you got Mike Connolly. Like there wasn't a whole lot that he had to figure out there. It was an already established system. Now you take that same guy and you take him to New York, and maybe you were taking him thinking you were going to get those superstars and KD or Kyrie, or like that was the model that Fizz was going to be inheriting this season. But instead, you had the expectations raised just a little bit, and you had a roster that, first of all, you know, everybody's killing them with the roster. I think the roster's better than their record. I don't think it's the worst roster by any stretch in the league. They're not playing up to what they could be. But it takes some nuance to be able to like utilize those different pieces. You got to be able to kind of see matchups and exploit them.
I want to ask you something too. You just brought up a really good point. New York takes a big swing and a miss in free agency.
Yes.
And prior to, you know, Fizz getting the New York job, he had this image like he got fired and it was wrong.
In Memphis.
You know, Memphis, yeah. He's the player's coach. He's the guy. Like, I'll play for Fizz. Fizz is that dude. Do you feel like he was brought in a sense, to be able to recruit, that he had a image of he's our guy, we can relate to him? And when those guys, they swung and missed in free agency, it's kind of like, maybe you're not as much as the player's coach as we thought.
Yeah, I think he was still a player's coach because I think the players do like him. But that's almost the reverse. It's almost the reverse in that with the players they had, you almost needed someone who is less of a player's coach and was more structured. Because some of the problems that I see them having, like Julius Randle, you're not a closer. We're not handing you the ball in the last 2 minutes and you go win the game for us. We're not structured that way, and you're not that kind of player. And you needed somebody, and yet that's what I saw Randle do multiple times. You needed a coach who was not going to allow that to happen and do it without, you know, pissing Randle off. Or risking that, but knowing that you were doing the right thing for the team and that you'd still have the rest of the team. He wasn't doing that. Now, it's also, it was difficulties coming out of the gate. They didn't have, you know, Elfrid Payton was hurt. Dennis Smith Jr. was hurt. Like, they didn't have anybody who was a point guard for a good stretch of 8-9 games that nobody was paying attention to.
That's tough.
And that, like, when you have all those bigs that need to be organized, like, what do you, that's a tough, and now you put that on RJ Barrett? Like, that's a tough spot to be, and I don't think people took that into account. Here's the thing with New York is, like, everybody's, Two things. One, it bothers me that everybody's killing them, because you can kill them, but you should be killing the Atlanta Hawks and you should be killing the New Orleans Pelicans. Because
why is that?
Because at the beginning of the year, if you asked people who's got the best roster, I heard people talking about the Atlanta Hawks roster, all that young talent. I heard people talking about the New Orleans Pelicans and all that young talent. People were kind of running down the New York Knicks as not having that much talent. Right? Fair?
Yeah, I really like the Hawks roster. I'm one of the guys that's very high on them.
Okay, so look at their record. Well, they got one more win than the New York Knicks. Is anybody questioning that team? No, the answer is no. No one's killing them the way they're killing the Knicks. And again, I'm not a whataboutism or yeah, but I don't like that. I just feel as if the opportunity to punk the Knicks, nobody had at first opportunity. People are just going to drag them as hard as they can. I'll tell you, I feel like the Pelicans are a disappointment. When I look at their roster and I look at some of the losses they've had, I question, like, what's going on there? They should be better than they are. And because I don't.
Well, okay, how about this? Yeah, Drew Holiday can rise to the occasion, but the questions with Drew is that he's not going to fire, like, go rally the troops. Like, he'll give you an all-star performance against whoever he's playing against, but he's not the guy. He's not trying to be the guy that rallies the troops.
No, I get that. Look, I'm not saying they're first of all, I liked their draft class. I liked it above and beyond Zion. I thought Alexander Walker was a nice pickup. Saw him play in Summer League. I thought, this guy can give you minutes. Jackson Hayes, I like. You got Derek Favors. You got Lonzo Ball. You got Josh Hart. You got Brandon Ingram. I mean, you have some depth on that roster.
I don't see winning, though. I'm going to be honest. I don't see winning.
You see better than 6-18.
Dude.
Look at Charlotte.
I'm going to throw this.
You're going to tell me Charlotte's got a better roster?
In terms of the Pelicans, and I'd have to go look at this, they're disgusting defensively from what I've seen.
Yes, they are.
And that is a big thing. That's not Alvin's deal. But they don't have a star in my mind that just goes and gets wins. And I wouldn't be surprised, Rick, and don't quote me on this, if their strength of schedule is pretty darn high right now. Because I've seen Lakers, Clippers, Utah, like, they're Houston. I wouldn't be surprised if they're top five, top 10 in strength of schedule right now. And that means a lot. Think about last year. Utah struggled mightily. And then they finally got going later on because they were just scheduled brutal to start, man.
All well and good.
You're not buying it.
No. Look, the Orlando Magic are 11-12. Who's their guy who goes and gets you wins?
Yeah, but they're in the East, bro. Like, you got Pistons four times a year. You're playing.
Atlanta Hawks are in the East.
They're young. They're young. Steve Clifford is that dude, too, by the way. Shout out Steve Clifford.
Yeah,
Steve
no doubt.
Heck of a job.
Steve Clifford.
All right, but let me ask this.
Yeah.
As we're all over the place, but we're still talking New York and Fizz.
Right.
His job, fair to say, right, would be to develop R.J. Barrett, right?
Yes. And Mitchell Robinson.
And Mitchell Robinson.
Who played very up and down.
As he should. He's all over the place. He's still got a lot to learn. So RJ's averaging 13-9, pretty much 14 a game and 3 assists and 5 rebounds a game. Is he beyond pace? Should he be a 20-point scorer and you're getting blown out by 30?
No.
Is Fizdale not put so, you know, one of his main jobs pretty much is develop RJ and the other kid.
Yes, but you were also, like, I didn't expect that the Knicks were going to win a lot of games. I thought that they were going to be tough to beat. And they actually, I don't know how many games, I would say more than half of their games, they've led in the fourth quarter. Now that's not, and then lost by like double digits. That's not just not having a closer. That's not knowing what to go to, what lineup, what closing lineup to utilize, where to try to attack the opposing team to stay in the game. And that, to me, is coaching. That's where maybe I have RJ Barrett out there. Maybe I don't. Maybe I have Elfrid Payton out there. Maybe it's Marcus Morris and Randall. Like, maybe it's Robinson. Like, that's where, you know, and I'm not saying by any stretch it's easy. I think it's one of the most challenging things to do is to figure out on a nightly basis in the moment, where do I go to? What gives me my best chance? What do I run? And it's difficult. I mean, I think Steve Clifford's one of those coaches that's very good at it. Like, he figures out this is what I've got. I think Jim Boylan.
Well, there's no cuts defensively with Clifford either.
Right. But he's kind of established, like, his DJ Augustine's his go-to. Like, you can develop.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Markelle Fultz, but DJ Augustin is his ripcord. Like, things get into trouble or I need to close a game, I can put the ball in DJ's hands. DJ's not necessarily going to get me the bucket, but he's going to get the ball to the guy that I want to have to get the bucket. He's going to make the right play. Like, so I'm not, and here's the other part. Like, I would dare say, one, I believe Fizz is relieved to be out of that situation, because you talked about coaches get panicked. He looked out of sorts. I don't want to say panicked. That's a tough word. But he looked like he was searching for answers in the games, at the podium afterward, on the sideline. Like, whenever I saw him, he looked stressed. He's got 4 years, $22 million.
Would I be wrong to say that RJ Barrett's not a point guard? There was a lot thrown on his shoulders.
Yeah.
And expectations. And even let's say with that team, let's say he was just Lonzo Ball and passing and pushing tempo and distributing. Might be a little more than what they have now, because at least, you know, Lonzo's going to make the right play.
Yeah.
You know, and he's got his deals that he has to worry with. But, you know, to me, RJ's just a player.
Right.
RJ's a good utility guy. He's going to develop into a solid basketball player. But I wouldn't want him necessarily being my starter point guard. I think, you know, Boris Diaw was drafted to Atlanta as a point guard, it just didn't work out.
Right.
And he got a bad name. But when Boris Diaw was your power forward, playing point forward, that was dangerous.
Yeah. If you can put a guy in a situation where he can take advantage of he has an advantage over the guy who's guarding him because of his unorthodox, like, protect him from what makes him vulnerable at that position and allow him to play off of his strength. Like Boris, if Boris has to do a steady job of working on the block, he's probably going to get eat up at one end, and he's not really not going to give you a whole lot at the other end. If you allow him to play high and be a passer and then find ways to protect him at the defensive end, well, now you got a chance.
True.
You know, if you got a shot blocker behind him, now he can kind of, you know, he can three-quarter it, or he can gamble a little bit and use his hands rather than he's just got to bow up and hold a guy. So,
But I'll say this to point out, at those two positions that you draft, Mitchell Robinson, who's, you know, he's shown some life, and RJ, those aren't winning players right now.
No.
And Mitchell Robinson is your five man. You're going to give up, you know, 40 dunks a game and 10, you know, 70 points in the paint, 80, 90 points in the paint, because he goes after every shot, but he'll get in foul trouble. Yep. He has poor positioning sometimes, just things that young players do. Julius Randle, the questions with him, he's not a five. Okay. He's not a shot blocker. It's not what he does. And he's at that hybrid where his best position is five on offense.
Right.
And as a four, you know, either you got to post him, but he's not necessarily quite a spacer yet. Improved, yes. But to me, I don't see a winning roster. And it starts with guard play.
So this is where, as a coach, you manipulate the game based on what are your strengths? And yeah, with Mitchell Robinson gives you rim protection, but it's
if I want to win, I bench him for Taj Gibson.
Yes,
and he comes off the bench.
Yes, right. But so how? But then, who are you pairing with Taj Gibson in order to exploit the opposition? Because Taj isn't going to be stepping out to the 3-point line. So I got to have another big. I got to have Marcus Morris out there. I can't play Julius Randle and Taj Gibson together.
Let me give you this. Just how you mentioned the perfect person, DJ Augustine.
Yep.
DJ Augustine on that team would have New York, I don't want to say in the playoffs.
No.
But they'd be competitive every night because DJ would make the right play.
Yep.
That's why there's a premium, Rick. And I know you've even always talked about this. When you draft, what's the premium on? It's not the guys in the middle. It's point guards and it's big men.
Yep.
I can't teach height and I can't teach you the point guard position. It's one of two things. Either you got it or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even have just enough at those positions. So a guy like DJ Augustine, not that we're going to say he pushes you over the top, but he gives you an opportunity to win games that those other guys aren't. RJ Barrett, you're not an improved shooter yet. I'm still going under the screens. You know, you don't have enough. It's easy to guard, and you're playing in a push-to-pace, pick-and-roll type of offense, you know, where your best scorer is Julius Randle. So at the end of the game, you're running things to your power forward trying to get a shot, and it don't look right.
Right, right. No, it's it's funny. Like, we look at DJ Augustine, and, you know, we're talking about him like he's an all-star. But a guy, like a point guard on mediocre teams or subpar teams that can just get you into what you want to do. DJ Augustine is a 5'11", 32-year-old point guard. And yet, it's like J.J. Barea. Like, J.J. Barea comes on the floor and you think, oh, well, we're going to exploit him. Next thing you know, one, he's getting to the cup. Jalen Brunson, another one. Like, people fall in love with the metrics and the dimensions. And when it comes to my point guard, I just need somebody who can organize me, get us into what we need to do, and get the ball in the right place. And if you're going to be undersized, then you got to be able to shoot the three. Like, I think Elfrid Payton could do a lot of the things that New York needs, except he can't space the floor. And they just don't have enough floor spacers elsewhere for them to survive without a shooting point guard. That's why you end up playing RJ Barrett as much as you do.
So now to come on home to my same point, if you have somebody else that you know lined up for Fizz,
yes,
do what you got to do. I don't mind the firing. But if you thought this was performance-based, I don't know what he was going to make out of that roster. I'll be honest.
The roster was largely built to protect their cap space and to give them movable contracts of veteran players that playoff teams look at come in February and say, you know what? We could use a Taj Gibson. We could use a defensive guy like that off the bench. Even Julius Randle and his contract, you know, there's somebody out there who might say, you know what? That in the right situation, Wayne Ellington, we need a shooter on the perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even Marcus Morris, Bobby Portis. I mean,
if you're New York, and I know this, I'm sure this was thrown out, would you take Bradley Beal if you have to take Wall too?
Yes, I would. Yes.
Why? Let me say, John's injury doesn't scare you.
Oh, John's injury scares me. You know what? Let me think about that a little bit because
now I'm stuck on. I can't necessarily get another guy. I got to rehab John. I got to figure things out.
Yeah, but here's the difference. Here's the distinction. Is you have 6 first-round picks in the next 4 years. The Knicks do. So the possibility that you're going to get another guy through the draft is sitting right there for you.
Yeah, you're going to get a guy. They're going to get a baller. They're going to get a guy. It would be catastrophic if they don't end up with like a serviceable player.
Right.
This would be crazy.
Right. So,
but and this is and I ask this because now I'm projecting that I'm gonna swing and miss in free agency. So I have to take a chance at getting Bradley Beal.
Right. And this, you know, honestly, I mean, I'm looking at. See, this is what's intriguing right now about New York, and things may have changed because the chemistry right now between LeBron and AD and what AD's able to do playing next to LeBron. I know that AD's dad has always had an eye on New York and has always had the idea that he wants his son to have his own team and in a big market. Like that's dad's vision is from everything that I've been told. I wonder if everything that he's experiencing with LeBron is changing that, or whether he does a lot, whether AD does Alonzo Ball and says, "Dad, I know what you want, but I know what I want, and I'm doing this." The question I have is, like, I'm not sure who AD is without LeBron James. I see what he is now, and he's a monster. And I've been told that this is the first time that he's really been coached. Like, that's also what you're seeing. You're seeing a guy
who
was just doing it on talent before. Now, they're giving him an idea. What I don't know is, if I'm New York, and I have the AD says, I'm coming. I mean, I don't know how you say no, but do I need to get another guy? Do I then need to make a Bradley Beal play because I don't want AD carrying that weight? And this is the other factor that I think impacted Fizz negatively is you got to have a certain personality and a certain toughness to deal with New York. Like you're just being the microscope, the expectations, the ridiculous media having like zero patience along with their fans. Like you got to be able to like stare all that down and deal, you know, and do it with an owner who is a barroom brawler. So it's not for everybody. And I just look at Fizz and I like Fizz. I think he's a good coach. I hope he gets another shot. I hope it's more suited for his what his skill set is. But I look at New York and I look at what's happened with that team and I think it's as much because New York was a little too much for him and the demands of that team were a little too much for his resume. I don't think like anybody who's saying, oh, it was a roster, this was totally unfair, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, ultimately, they hired Fizz, so they thought he could get the job done. There is a culpability on their part. But I also feel as if this is not like Fizz, you know, given a different roster. I feel as if the roster underperforming, I have to put some of that on his plate.
Yeah, I don't think he ducks that at all. I think, you know, your job in a team that's under, I guess you'd say undermanned somewhat.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, well, Fizz, take these good players and get them to the playoffs.
They weren't talking playoffs. They were just talking. In fact, they're not even talking like win-loss record. They're just talking be in every game. Be competitive. Be a team that nobody wants to play because it's going to be a pain in the ass. Yeah, we might be better than you, but and we're going to have to work. We're going to have to work to beat you. A little bit.
I just think I just think it's a bad fit. And I'll say this, Rick.
Yeah.
Let's say for some random reason, you know, half those guys are on 4 or 5 year deals, right? Even 2 year deals. When you bring in a roster and every guy on the roster is on a 1-1 with the team option.
Yeah.
What the heck? You are setting yourself up for 30-point losses. You are setting Fizz up because everybody is thinking about themselves.
Yeah.
Rick, you've been in a workplace. I'm on a one-day contract. I'm on a day's deal or whatever it may be. And now I got to show out. I got to show out. Everybody's not full-time. Those weren't full-time Knicks over there. So they're trying to get buckets. They're trying to do what they do.
I'll give you that. At the same time, R.J. Barrett, Taj Gibson, Kevin Knox, Marcus Morris, Peyton, Bobby Portis, Julius Randle, Mitchell Robinson, Dennis Smith Jr. I didn't give you the whole roster. You're telling me I can't get more than 4 wins out of that group?
Not when you throw them together like that. You couldn't even give them a guaranteed 2 years. You got everybody on a 1-year deal.
Yeah.
Everybody?
Yeah.
Julius is not. Okay.
Honestly, Robinson has been disappointing to me because he is viewed as a cornerstone for this franchise. And he does, like, I understand foul trouble. Wendell Carter Jr. gets into foul trouble for the Bulls. But you know the one thing that Wendell Carter Jr. does every game? He plays hard.
Yeah.
He hits the boards. I look at him, he's going to play 10, 12 years. Mitchell Robinson is messing around. Mitchell Robinson does not look like someone who's trying to get better every game and is trying to say, I'm here to stay and I want to be a centerpiece on a team. He's got a little Willie Cauley-Stein in him.
Well, he also is in a situation where he doesn't have to work as hard for those minutes because he's got them. There's no competition. There's no other guy on the roster that does what he does. So he knows that he has to play. And Fizz is in a situation where the kid's got to play. There's nobody else there.
He's only playing.
It's just ugly. Trust me, Rick. It is ugly.
He's only playing 21 minutes a game.
But he got to play that. He has to.
Okay, so if I'm Mitchell and I'm playing 2021, aren't I trying to play 30? Don't I want to be playing 30, 35? I guarantee you, outside of the foul trouble, he could work himself into that position.
I agree. I'll just say for a young player, I don't believe that maturity is going to be there at this time in your career. It's very easily all he's thinking about is dunking and blocking shots, which he gets. It happens, but the way it happens isn't necessarily wins.
Yeah. It will be interesting. Here's the thing for me when it comes to the Knicks overall, and we'll leave it at this, because we just spent 40 minutes. We kind of went around the league, but this was really a Knicks-centric.
Knicks around the league.
Knicks-centric podcast for sure. Is they still have their cap space. Like, you're right. Having all those guys on one-year deals doesn't necessarily foster guys that are playing for the franchise as much as themselves. That said, you got a bunch of 30-somethings. You would hope that, like, Taj Gibson and Marcus Morris and Julius Randle, that these are vets, that they bring a certain amount of pride to the job. But here's the reality. They are on one-year deals, which means you haven't tied yourself into it. They don't have a single bad contract on their roster. Not a single one. They have 6 first-round picks in the next 4 years. And who knows? Maybe they can pick up another one, moving one of these vets at the trade deadline.
Let me give you this, Rick.
That's what this year was all about, was
let's... You know what this to me is? You mess with the integrity of the game. This is almost on par, and I'm not going to say it's disgusting.
No, it's not the same as Philly.
That's how I feel. It's not as bad. And I don't say that. Look, I agree. They didn't come into the year saying we're tanking.
Right.
But you came in such business-like that there's no way they're going to win. You don't even feel good about going to New York. Like, what am I going to do next? Everybody went in there thinking about what they got to do next year. A full roster of and New York just listened to the media and everybody. And these dudes, there's no commitment.
Yeah, you know what makes me feel as if for whatever reason they were able to sell a different story is Marcus Morris backed out of a deal with San Antonio to come to New York.
It's New York, baby.
That's what I mean.
New York, baby.
That's what I mean.
And they still didn't commit. We're doing one-on-ones all over the place. That's bad. That's a bad workplace, bro. Dudes are probably scrapping in practice. Like, who knows what that – when you don't know what tomorrow's going to – it's not fun. Anymore, because your mind can't be in the game. Yeah. There's two guys with, three guys? Mitchell, RJ – and Julius that are like, oh, we good, man. Like the rest of the dudes probably living in the hotel still, man. Like, it ain't cool.
Yeah, you might be right about that.
Oh, it's hard, bro. I've been there before. It's hard. When I went to Cleveland and I was like, yo, trade me. Why haven't y'all traded me yet? I should have been traded in the summer. And I had to report.
By the way, so we're recording this after they lost at home in Mike Miller's first game without David Fizdale. They lost when Julius Randle couldn't hit two free throws to send it to overtime. They lost 104-103 to Indiana. And then they're on the road, and they went up to Portland, and they got beat 115-87. Ouch. But, hey, cap space, draft picks.
Yeah, and what do you expect? That's why I want to know why the firing is, and I'll have a true judgment whether it was good or bad.
Yeah, well, it wasn't because they're going to bring somebody in now.
Well, I hope maybe you know. So the courting process starts.
You know whose money I'd put the money on?
Who?
Mark Jackson.
Really, I hope Mark is a Knickerbocker. He's a New York guy.
That's exactly it.
And he's the best at building, and the players are behind Mark. He is really good. Now, if it's a question of basketball, ain't no question. If you just need to win, we don't care how we look. You don't care about reporting to an owner. Like, Mark can get you there. If that's what you want to win, you can win with Mark Jackson.
Let me throw another name at you. See what your reaction is. Rick Pitino.
I, you know, Rick is a legend. He's exciting. I have to see what that transition looks like. Heck, I got to see him as an assistant, you know, before I see him as a head coach in the NBA. Not to say that he hasn't grown as a coach. But I'm intrigued. In New York, you know, Pitino's got a little bit of baggage. I don't know if that goes away or that just, I believe, it multiplies in New York. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's a name that would be respected in New York.
I would like to see Pitino as an assistant first, and then he.
Could you put him with Mark Jackson? Could he be an assistant with Mark? I'm not so sure about that.
He may not have a choice if that's what, you know, Dolan wants, and then it's kind of a setup job.
Yeah, right. And that'd be interesting. That'd be interesting. All right, that does it for this episode of Bucher, Hollins, and the New York Knicks. Okay. However you feel about the show, please rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you'd like us to do something for you, screenshot that review and send it to @BucherFriends, and you'll be eligible to win an autographed copy of either Derrick Rose's I'll Show You biography with Sam Smith, the legendary Sam Smith, or Yao Ming's Life in Two Worlds with me, and we will make sure that whatever copy you choose will be autographed. Again, screenshot your review and send it to @BucherFriends. In the next podcast, I'll catch up with our man Will Blackman, and we will get into some of what we talked about here, Jason Garrett, and where the Dallas Cowboys go from here, and do they have a fatal flaw in their structure that goes beyond Jason Garrett that guarantees that they are never going to get back to the promised land. We'll discuss all of that in the next podcast. In the meantime, For Ryan and myself, as always, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.